showtime! Woo! Woo!
Welcome to the very, very first weekly wrestling ramble by the Jibber Jabber Podcast. I am Kevin Wells, as always, and joined today the new co-host of weekly wrestling ramble, Todd Forrest. Todd, I don't suppose you wanted an alias. Jordan goes as J Mac.
Yeah,
he stays as Todd.
I'm happy as Todd.
Yeah. As Todd. HB Todd.
I think we'll establish that in this episode for sure.
Absolutely. So this new venture is basically a side note to the Jibber Jabber Podcast. It's the wrestling section of what we are. This will always be a podcast with Todd and I. You will occasionally see J-Mac jumping in and out when there's a bit of wrestling to talk about, because J-Mac kind of dabbles his toe in wrestling a little bit. I think if it interests him, he'll jump on. If not, he'll be left with us two. It'll basically just be weekly wrestling ramble. We'll chat about that week in wrestling, but we're also going to spice it up with some salt and pepper, right, Todd?
I think what it is, he's seen us together, he sees how we speak about wrestling. It's almost like speaking in code, and hopefully that comes across. And I think he's a guy who's never watched wrestling in his life before, but now he's starting to see elements of it, and he's interested. So hopefully we can do the same on this show for a lot of you, even if you are non-believers at this minute.
Non-believers. That's exactly what they are. They're non-believers, and I think even this show will be great for Jordan, for J-Mac, because we'll be able to make a wrestling fan out of him. As the day that we record here, it's the 27th of December. You guys are going to hear this on the 1st, so you guys, happy new year.
Yes.
But the previous year, 2020, has kind of been the shittiest year for a long time that we can remember, and not to mention for many reasons, but one being the passing of Brody Lee, which is like kind of came out of nowhere.
It's really strange. I mean, the day of recording this actually happened first thing this morning. I didn't know anything about it, of course. I got your message and I was like, oh my word. He'd been off television. Actually, it's crazy because I read it and it said actually his last match was in July. And I was like, Christ, that's been a very quick 6 months. But we knew something was up. I just thought he was injured or maybe he was getting some time off. But then you read something like that and you just go, crikey. And I suppose it puts this whole year into perspective. There's a lot of people have lost loved ones across this year. And it's not just, it's not natural causes. It's not part of the plan, unfortunately. This guy was 41, certainly not unfit. I mean, he was a wrestler, for crying out loud. Leaves behind, family and two kids.
It's just really, really sad that someone's lost his life, but as well, he had so much more to give to the wrestling industry. Do you know what I think? I think we haven't really even seen the best of him yet. And I know that that was something that there was a passion of his to kind of show that, because that's why he left WWE to pursue that and to kind of have it cut off before he even really got the chance to get going.
Absolutely. I mean, he came into AEW as quite a big deal. I mean, he came in as the Exalted. Everybody thought the Exalted one was going to be Matt Hardy, but no, they trusted him to take the reins and make that stable something. Now, don't get me wrong, he probably didn't get off to the best of starts, but he realised that and he was evolving that character and he was getting to the point where he was actually, figuring this out. And then, of course, everything's transpired and we've lost a guy who's 41 years old but still had the best years in front of him, you would argue.
Yeah. He reminded me of Bruiser Brody.
Oh,
again, another person who died fairly young. Obviously, the circumstances were different. As we know right now, the circumstances surrounding Brody Lee's death was something to do with his lungs, but non-COVID related, according to his wife. There's been a massive outpouring of love and grief from the wrestling community. WWE acknowledging, obviously. I mean, it's one thing to be like, right, he's no longer with WWE. Maybe some bridges were burned, but at the end of the day, he's a human being and he had a lot of family and friends. I say family, but friends kind of just like family.
If you've got the network, they've actually put up Luke Harper, as he was known in WWE Network, special up of his best matches. I know there was one where I think it was, I'm not 100% sure, I think it was maybe the Wyatt family versus the Shield. I'm not quite sure. I'll be honest, I'm not up to date with WWE from that time period, but it's, if you've got a network and if you want to see some of his work, it's there, of course, AEW. I seen it, there's a lot of outpouring. Chris Jericho says that he's starting to do a lot of his best work in AEW. So you could, of course, we don't really know if there's a place you can watch that, but certainly a lot to go back to. He was a cracking big man wrestler, and it's an awful shame that he's going to join a list of a lot of others like him before, who unfortunately in this industry for some reason have been taken from us far too early.
Yeah, it's a real shame, but you know, all we can kind of do is just keep moving forward and you know, just kind of remember his touch on the wrestling industry. He was a great big man. He was a fast, kind of agile, and from what everybody says about him, he was a great person. So just kind of have to, and it's a shame we have to kind of start this series off on such
such a sour note.
But it'd be quite hard not to kind of acknowledge that. That and Dan Hodge actually died on the same day. He obviously was a lot older, so it's not kind of making the news, but it's been quite a shitty end of the year for...
Yeah, and Pat Patterson died maybe just over a couple of weeks ago as well. We were just kind of rallying after that. Massively influential. It's been a really bad year for wrestling in many ways. It's been a bad year for everybody, but absolutely, what you say is completely true. We've lost a big character in the wrestling industry, and a even better person behind the scenes from what it appears to be.
Yeah, the next episode of AEW should be really interesting because I don't think they've had to deal with that publicly yet. So it'll be the first time to see how they kind of deal with it. I would imagine they'll have the Brody Lee armbands and the tribute to Tim Bell and whatnot. So.
Well, it's going to be interesting, isn't it? I mean, we'll talk about AEW when we do our weekly roundup. It's going to leave a lot of question marks going forward, as we'll speak about, but... absolutely, I think you're right. I think the next episode will be a Dynamite is Brody type episode.
For sure. Speaking of the next episode of Dynamite, let's talk about the previous episode of Dynamite. So we'll kind of start us off with AEW and move over to WWE. I mean, those are kind of the two main topics that we'd cover unless there's something else noteworthy going on in wrestling. And by the way, I think one of the hardest things to do right now in any wrestling company is be current and kind of have something worth talking about while COVID isn't a thing. So I think the only, for this point in time right now, I think the only things we can really talk about is AEW and WWE, because they're the only guys really going to bat. So we'll start off with the AEW. I'll maybe even kick this off. So this week in AEW, as I was watching this week's episode, right, and I think the main event was Hikaru Shida, right? One thing I'm just going to say straight up, that's not Asuka.
No.
Right. And I think, AEW, see, something that kind of bothers me, because AEW, obviously, I believe in AEW and I'd like to see them succeed. And there's a lot of good in AEW, but there's a lot of that early, like, you know, when TNA kind of started just ripping off everything WWE done.
Yes.
I think there's elements of that. And that woman comes out pretty much like Asuka. And the issue with that is there's already an Asuka. You're not going to be better at Asuka than being Asuka. So, change it up. I think that woman's really talented. I think she just should change it up and try and differentiate herself completely from Asuka. And you know what? As well, she's not even the only one that does that. There are wrestlers in AEW that are currently trying to be wrestlers in WWE or vice versa. And it just kind of makes you go, "What, the Street Profits?" I mean, Profits AEW or WWE? I can't even tell. What one are the Street Profits?
Street Profits are WWE. It's Private Party.
Are they not the same thing?
They are practically, they are. Like, it's very difficult to tell them apart. They're both they're two African-American tag teams who just seem to have the same type of party all night gimmick and kind of bounce around the ring.
Really hard to kind of tell them apart. And these are the kind of things that I kind of thought to note while I'm watching it that really puts me off. I'm just like, right, I don't care. It's just stupid. And it's a shame that something as simple as that is enough to turn me off, but it does.
You touched upon the women's division in AEW. I mean, I think if AEW has been running for over a year now, and this has been the first proper 2020, unfortunately for them, has been their first you know, end-to-end year that they've actually started on television. And there's been highs and there's been lows, but their women's division certainly is one of the massive improvements they could make from their first year and a half. Mm-hmm. My personal opinion, I think Nyla Rose has been booked terribly. I feel that she should have been the inaugural AEW Women's Champion and should have held the belt and made it credible for over a year, but that's not happened. We've actually
had three. I like about Nyla Rose, and I thought would have been really interesting, right? As she's a transsexual,
a transgender,
right? That's a transsexual.
Yes, oh, yes, you did. That. Well, really,
right? So she used to be a guy. Play on that, absolutely play on that, right? Because I know that there was a lot of people up in arms. You know, she shouldn't be in it because she was built like a man. Well, wait a minute, it's wrestling.
Yes.
Does they really count, right?
Absolutely.
So I think they should have absolutely played on that. Like, they should have made her an absolute tank. Unbeatable.
Exactly.
For like 2 years, Rusev, like original Rusev run, kind of unbeatable. Right?
She should be the woman's Brock Lesnar right, in that absolutely. Company.
I mean, she technically had balls. She had balls, right? I mean, come on. Right? No disrespect to her whatsoever. Like, but that if that wasn't enough to run with.
Yeah. It's certainly something that could do improvement. I know that Kenny Omega takes a lot of creative control of the women's division, allegedly, and he likes his Japanese wrestlers. That's why the two of the women's female champions have both been Japanese. Forgive me if I've got that wrong, but we've had Riho, and then we've got Hikaru Shida, who's current champion. But we'll see how that progresses. Talking about AEW, there's a storyline going on right now. I feel like I've watched the same segment for the last 3 weeks with the introduction of Sting. Sting came to AEW a couple of weeks ago and it was really cool. He came into the ring, he stared down Cody Rhodes because of course he fucking did, and he stared down Darby Allin because of course he fucking did. And I feel like Sting's only just been doing that for the last couple of weeks. Comes out to the ring, says a few things, sometimes doesn't say a few things, before it gets interrupted by Taz and his cronies. I feel like I've watched the same segment over and over again, and this week was no different. But instead, Sting came to the ring with Tony Schiavone. I don't know how you're supposed to say it.
That's right, Tony Schiavone.
Yeah. Did you know that they were both in WCW and TNT in the 90s? Did you know that, Kevin?
I was very much aware. I was aware before Sting returned to AEW. I mean,
I did not know that because, you know, they've not been knocking absolute fucking pan out of it. So for somebody like me who never watched a lot of WCW in the 90s, it's really nice to be reminded every single fucking week that Tony Schiavone was a WCW commentator back in the 90s when Sting was...
Yeah.
Anyway, for those who are not picking up on my facetiousness, I do apologise, but I'm being facetious as hell. So yeah, Sting came out, he did the Dusty Rhodes impression, because, well, of course he fucking did. It's his son's company. It was quite a good impression, to be fair, but then of course Taz and his bunch of jobbers came out.
They are jobbers, one of them shouldn't be. I think Brian Cage... There's a lot of potential in him. Was that Ricky, what's his face?
Ricky Starks.
Right. I think there's something to him. I think there's, another year or two. Brian Cage for sure. But the thing about Brian Cage, he's got that thing that I like to class as the Bobby Lashley syndrome. There's something about him that's very, like, he's intimidating, but his face, if you shave off those wee sideburns, says that his mum packs his packed lunch, right? Right? You know his mum packs his packed lunch and you know he's going to be annoyed if she's put butter on it when he asks for no butter, right? There's something about him that's very much like that. Something that Brock Lesnar doesn't possess. When you look at Brock Lesnar, it's sheer intensity. Doesn't matter what he's doing, right? You just don't even want to fuck with him. Yes. Brian Cage doesn't possess that, unfortunately.
I can understand where you're coming from. I personally feel that when he first came in, he should have been booked as a monster. The problem was, as we call him, Ambrose, but Moxley held the title at the time, and he was holding it in quite a bit of a run. So it felt like when he came in, he couldn't beat him. But I would have personally made the choice for Cage to run right over him, because I'm kind of the idea, if you're going to bring in a monster, build him big and give him longevity. But they've had several chances to do this, AEW, and have not done it once. Brody Lee, we mentioned him earlier in the show, he should have been the first one. The second one, who's completely perplexing me at the minute, is Lance Archer. He should have been booked as a monster. and Luke Cage was the third botched attempt, in my opinion. And
Brian Cage.
Luke Cage. I say Luke Cage. I'm not the first. I'm not the last. Brian Cage.
Happens always.
I know.
Do you know? I think this year as well is they've got too many quote unquote big guys in AEW. Right, but here's the thing. Do you think maybe that's why they're like, Miro, we already have these big root-tenive motherfuckers, so why don't you come in as someone wearing a pink t-shirt and start playing arcade games and act like a right bitch?
Don't get me started, man.
I mean, what's he done yet in AEW that's really notable?
Well, he seems to have got really angry a few times about people, you know, switching off his arcade machines or fucking up his PlayStations. See, the minute, I mean, I've been a big supporter of Orange Cassidy especially when pre-COVID, when he had the audiences behind him, he was absolutely over. He still is very over, but the audience were kind of like half the appeal to Orange Cassidy. It's kind of what made him. And behind the COVID curtain, I really don't think that's worked for me. So seeing him like up against Miro really should be a total mismatch, and the fact that isn't tells me that everything Miro has done so far regarding his creative is wrong, because him and Orange Cassidy in a ring should be the biggest mismatch on the whole show. And to go back to the segment we're speaking about, talk about mismatches, in the segment with Sting, where Sting's clearly being touted as a mouthpiece for Kevin said this to me before the show and it absolutely destroyed me. Everybody's favourite trolley collector, Darby Allin.
He is though, right? Is he not just the guy that you see at Walmart, Asda, right, Tesco? He's the guy that goes and gets the trolleys that people leave, right? Put Thanks, a wee mate, high yeah. vis on him.
That's I'll take him. That for you.
That's him. And no disrespect to him whatsoever. I think what's happening is that they're kind of putting a rocket under his ass right now, when I don't think it's time
ready for him.
It's not, I don't think it's time.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. He's. I get why people or younger people would find him cool. He's got the face paint. He rides a skateboard. He's got that quite a good entrance theme. That ding 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 ding.
Annoys me. Do you know what annoys me about that? Is the fact that his pals are getting the shit kicked out of them in the ring, right?
Yeah.
And his running has his music with him skating to the ring. Get to
I know.
Right. But see, if you're in a bar and your pal's getting glassed, are you going to be like, wait a minute, cue my fucking song, wait till I grab my skateboard? No, you're going to run in there and
because of the age we are, I completely agree with you, but I can see somebody who's 14, 15-year-old, that's who they are appealing to with Darby Allin, are going to see it as edgy and cool. So I get it. I think it's a bit shit, but I basically announced in this segment that Darby Allin's facing Luke Cage on the 6th of January.
Luke Cage,
fuck me, man. That's going to become a running talk. Brian Cage, the machine Brian Cage. Yeah. They're facing each other for the TNT Championship, and you know that Darby's not going to lose it. So there's got to be shenanigans to go down there, because see if Darby beats him clean, that guy's finished
absolutely. Well, here's something for you. Realistically, right? Who could Darby Allin, if you pick anybody in the AEW roster, just by sizing them up, doing that whole face-off in the ring, who could Darby Allin kick the shit out of?
To be fair, probably I would say Orange Cassidy, maybe. Probably, the booking at the minute probably would. Cody, not even Cody, who's actually, for wrestling terms, is actually on the smaller side, still completely outsizes him. I don't buy him at all.
Where would he be if he was working for Vince?
He would be on that 205 Live. Him and along with, there you go, Sammy Guevara. I feel like I've not seen a lot of Sammy lately. He, in my opinion, out of those two, they've had some cracking matches, actually, to be fair to them, when they've gone against each other. So they're being kind of touted. There was those two in Jungle Boy were kind of being touted as AEW's like future main eventers. But for me, Sammy's got the most potential, a lot of them. But you're right. If they were in WWE, they would be in 205 Live, or they would be one of the background dancers for somebody like an Adam Page or a Brodus Clay type thing. That's where Sammy and that's where Darby would be at the minute. So I suppose you can look at it that way. AEW are giving the much smaller guys a chance. But for me, with Darby Allin, he's going to have Sting to kind of legitimize him. But
why? There are other people that need it right now that could do with that.
I don't know. I feel like Darby Allin's still got a lot a lot of ways to go before he's legitimate in my eyes, or legitimate. I'm going to use that word.
He's getting the Roman Reigns treatment right now, and it'll backfire.
Well, the thing is, he seems to be quite popular, which I cannot understand. I mean,
was Roman, and then they overexposed him, and then it became very clear that he was the company guy, that the one they wanted. And when the fans realised that, it turns.
Oh, right. Well, let's get this first. He wasn't on the show this week, but Darby Allin is not the chosen one in regards to AEW. It's quite clear.
Well,
the chosen one is.
Yeah, well.
Chosen by himself.
did you realise, though, that they did make a big point about, you know, Darby Allin being the first wrestler in AEW to actually win a title? The first homegrown that didn't come from any other company.
No, to be honest.
I think they're kind of hanging their hat on that.
And fair play, if they want to legitimise their own people, I totally understand that.
Just keep him in his lane, though. Didn't he have him taking out Brian Cage?
You don't want to push him too soon. I think me and you are on the same page. I think he's been pushed to the moon too soon. It's not to say that he's particularly bad. He's certainly not offensive. He's just not at that level yet, and I don't buy it.
Speaking of being on the same page, why isn't fucking Hangman Adam Page getting that treatment?
Oh man, this kind of leads me onto another thing at the minute. He's kind of got this whole thing going on with the Dark Order, and same way that there was a match with Dustin Rhodes where, by the way, did you also know Dustin Rhodes had a gimmick in WCW in the 90s where he was called Seven?
Yeah.
Did you know that?
They dressed me up like fucking Uncle Fester because they wanted me to be the Undertaker.
Yeah, they've been making a big deal. And to be fair, sometimes that works, but
mate,
they really
just before,
do boot the arse at it, man.
That's one thing again, right? There's a few people in AEW where I'm like, I expected so much better of you. And Dustin Rhodes is a prime example of that, right? Why are we not seeing the Dustin Rhodes that we always knew was there in WWE?
To be fair, I actually probably going to be quite controversial. I expected to see less of him. I was expecting him to be... he had his match with Cody at the Double or Nothing, which was great. It seemed like it was a perfect time for him maybe to kind of go, you know what, that's my time to kind of pull back a little bit and maybe do some more work behind the scenes. And I thought it would be the case. But for me, he kind of shows up a little bit too often. I think he should be one of those guys that wrestles more as a special event, almost like your... Maybe a difficult comparison, but like a Triple H, you know, a guy who they maybe pull out one, you know, for the big, you know, just a big event, you know.
That makes sense, yeah.
Rather than just oversaturating with weekly
thing
matches
is, though, I've
and dynamite.
Really, really loved Dustin.
He's a good hand.
I've always loved him, and I've always known there's more to him. I'm really disappointed that I didn't get to see that. So, I mean, we've not yet got to see it. Here's another thing that gets me as well, right? Brian Pillman Jr., The son of Brian Pillman, what
who
the
is
fuck?
Like the double. He's like the double right. of Brian Pillman as well.
And here's another thing as well. Billy Gunn's son, Austin Gunn, right? At this point, all he is a Judas backing singer. Because the only thing
like
you
that.
See of him, the only... Let's start taking the up-and-coming wrestlers out of the audience, right? Because all we're seeing right now is them fucking singing to Judas, right? And it looks fucking stupid.
Fair. When they first did it, it was good because before it was when WWE didn't have their Thunderdome and AEW, we just sat through the silent WrestleMania and it was a better alternative. Mm-hmm. But now that they've got the crowds back in, at least a small margin of the crowd, they don't need that anymore. I completely agree with you. I don't know if it's just to make them look busy around the sides. But
let that be the audience. Give the audience those seats. We don't need to see wrestlers sitting there, you know, with bandanas around their head, singing like children.
Yeah,
Let's remember what they're trying to achieve here. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's difficult to take seriously when you're watching a guy who's been singing around the ring every week to Judas, and then coming out and actually trying. They did it with that Shook D with Pineapple Pete. He's an independent wrestler, Sugar Dunkington. It's sometimes referred to. He's done the Reckless Intent, stuff like that.
All right.
But he had a feud against Chris Jericho. I say a feud. He was basically was wearing a pineapple shirt in the audience, and everybody was catching his eye and going, "Hey, look at this guy. He's got Pineapple Pete," because Chris Jericho called him Pineapple Pete. Mm-hmm. And he ended up having a match on Dynamite against Chris Jericho. Oh. He got beat, but you know, it was a shining moment for him. So it was quite difficult to take that as credible, though. Like, he was singing Judas a couple of weeks back, and now here he is. He's actually...
Have you noticed as well? Sorry, Chris Jericho keeps... a lot of people are giving Chris Jericho flack for his shape.
Are you kidding me? On the guy's right. Like, he's excellent shape for a man of his age.
Right. Well, and then what they do though is they then, when someone says that comment you just said, which I completely validate, right? Then someone then holds up pictures of Triple H and Edge, who are in much, much greater shape at the same age, right? And they're like, for fuck's sake, Jericho. I think, first off, no one knows Jericho's schedule. No one knows what it is that he's at. I think they should lay the fuck off. That's Jericho that we've got now. This is an evolution of Jericho. His next evolution may not be in the same shape.
Correct.
This evolution of Jericho, he's in that shape. Take it for what it is.
I think it's also, he's a man of many hats. Mm-hmm. He fronts a rock band, right? Mm-hmm. He has a podcast where he is extremely consistent with putting out episodes every week, and you know how much work that takes, right?
Hell yeah.
He's on weekly television where he's getting involved in the creative process. He's got so many other things going on. Plus, that's a guy who, whenever I see him now, I'm like, that is a man who's enjoying his life. He's living it up. He does not give a care about what shape he's in. He's just living it up. He's drinking as much as he likes. He's partying. They did the Las Vegas skit with him and the Inner Circle. We'll not maybe touch on them too much because they've not really got a lot going at the minute. But yeah, that was when they went to Vegas. I was like, there's no way that they've not had a fucking blowout there. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Jericho looked legitimately like steaming in a lot of the in a lot of those vignettes. But yeah, I think people are wrong to, as you say, I think it's all kind of part of his gimmick. Plus, I really don't think he gives a shit at this point.
No, and neither should. I mean, he's Chris Jericho. You know what I mean? Who's got the right to say anything?
If most wrestling fans are honest, whether they've got allegiances to WWE or AEW or not, I think most people would recognise Jericho at least on the top 10 of their all-time lists.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not everybody, but I think the fair majority would agree that he's worthy of being spoken in that type of company. So
absolutely. So he gets a pass for no matter what he does.
Absolutely. He's at that point, he's earned it, man.
Mm-hmm.
He's absolutely. That's why when he's getting criticised a lot by the likes of Jim Cornette for the stuff he's pulling in the AEW, but you know what? He doesn't care. And to be honest, we should kind of give him his, he wants to do what he wants to do. Let him do it. He's earned it, man.
For sure. I'm going to kind of touch on MJF, who for me has been like the breakout from AEW, from everywhere. Recently, I'm going to say I don't like the MJF with the Inner Circle stuff. I think it makes him... MJF was legitimately a heel, and now I feel he's very Mizzy. Right?
Yeah, it's
very Mizzy now. I don't think it has. I don't think it's done anybody any favours.
Yeah, I mean, I'll talk about... I'll talk about him a little bit more because when we talk about our top fives, I've got a top five of this year, one segment which I want to include in there. But I totally agree with you. I don't feel he needed the whole Inner Circle rub. I felt like the guy, Santana Ortiz, and certainly Sammy Guevara, who I feel has benefited most of it, and Jake Hager to an extent, they've benefited from that rub. But with MJF, it was quite clear he didn't need that. And I think this is more to progress the storyline to the eventual breakup of the Inner Circle. But who knows when that's going to be. Personally, I would have preferred the breakup to just be between Sammy and Jericho to legitimise him, but that's not...
Again, Sammy's still very...
Yeah, but it would have been further down the road. Mm-hmm. I felt there was still a lot of mileage in the Inner Circle as what it was, and I think they felt that way too, but I honestly don't know where this is going at the minute.
One of the last things I'll say about my perception of this week in wrestling with AEW, is this the thing I see every week on AEW? I mean, this week's episode didn't really have a lot of substance to it, I thought. It just kind of matches, right?
It was pre-taped as well, so I think it was that. So,
but one thing I really dislike, not personally, but I don't like Young Buck matches. And any matches that have 400 fucking flips, right? I sat watching the Young Bucks episode, right? The Young Bucks. Yeah, they were wrestling. Who's those new guys? The guy that got like green trunks. I'm still remembering names for new guys. I'm a new kind of newcomer to the. Mm-hmm. It was the week, not just there, but the week before. And my wife was sitting there, and I goes, "Watch this." I says, "This genuinely look like they're trying to fucking hurt each other." And no, it was. Mm-hmm. You could see the two guys that were not the Young Bucks waiting to catch them. Right,
Alice,
so. Right, and they're doing fucking cheerleaders, man. Nothing, nothing about that goes, like, I don't watch that and go, oh, I'd hate to try and wrestle with those guys because I'll get my ass kicked. No, yeah. I'm just like, these guys are like fucking gymnastics. It's not wrestling.
I mean, I know you've got a lot to say in them, and I do too. And I have a lot to say about their pal Cody, because I feel they all have a lot of similar faults when it comes to their egos, at least the way it's coming across. I don't want to go on it too much because I know we've spoken quite a lot about AEW, but we'll have plenty of episodes to speak about the Young Bucks and Cody Rhodes. And also, we mentioned Hangman Man and Paige, not touched upon him. Mm-hmm. I feel his booking at the minute is a bit questionable, but with now knowing what we know regarding Brody Lee's passing, it might make a little more sense, the fact he's now starting to be teased with the Dark Order. I don't know. We'll wait and see.
See, if I'm honest, I've never really liked the Dark Order. I think what Brody Lee had got going from his class. Do you know what I don't like? Right? You had Brody Lee, a very polarizing figure. I thought, all right, cool. See his Dark Order minions and stuff. See the fact they're wearing fucking stupid face masks that look like sharks and stuff. Totally just...
Yeah,
no.
If you asked me, and people might disagree with this, I feel now that we know what we know, I think the right thing to do, I think it would be to come out the next episode and say, you know what, we're nothing without our Exalted One. We'll disband. The Dark Order is what it was. It'll be
that, or just like, you know, well, Brody Lee is no more, right? Mm-hmm. So wow, whatever he had over us is gone. You know what I mean?
I don't think they'll do that. I don't think they'll have. I don't think they'll do that because some. I don't think people would see that. I don't know.
If I was Brody Lee, I'd be like, use this shit in an angle.
I know, but we live in a very offended world right now, Kevin.
Yeah, yeah. I do think that there shouldn't be a Dark Order anymore.
I agree with that. I think we're both agreed on that. I think the Dark Order was close to running its course anyway. I think everybody was waiting to see what happened when Brody was going to come back. But of course, that's not going to happen now. So I think...
So it's really gutting. It really is.
Yeah, it's shocking. It's terrible news. So
really bad. So we'll move on to WWE now.
Yeah.
WWE. I mean, I took some notes.
I had to as well.
Drew McIntyre.
Yes.
Right? Fucking best work of his career.
That boy done well. Hometown boy, yeah.
Do you know what's funny is that his last ever indie wrestling match before he initially went to WWE, I can see from my house the venue they done it in, right?
Yeah.
Which is a wee reminder. And the fact that, and this is another thing, right? So J-Mac, you know, J-Mac, Jabber Jabber J-Mac, is the same age as Drew, right? I'm like, fucking look at what you can achieve, man. So did you
watch his Broken Skull session?
Exactly what I was going to say. Yeah,
that was awesome.
And I was relating to a lot of it because we've followed Drew from the start. We've always been rooting for him as he's our fellow Scotsman. Worked in the same company as we actually did. You know what I mean?
You did.
Well, you were there. We done
stuff. I was there in the game before I got out of Dodge. I went, this is not for me. This is pain, man. Anyway,
It's great to see him finally get there.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Now that you incorporate his full story in that, I think, you know, I just hope that it's not a one and done. I hope that they keep him in the main event picture and that he continues to kind of do what he's been doing.
I had the same question marks, but see, after if you've not listened to his Broken Skull session with Steve Austin, it's about an hour and a half long, and it's one of the best hour and a half you'll have this year. I really liked it because it's shown how much he'd grown, not just as a wrestler, but as a person. Mm-hmm. He freely admits that he was not ready first time round. But, you know, he's came back, he's reinvented himself, and now he's WWE champion. And I honestly see the way he was speaking. I was like, actually, you will be there. If you believe it and you continue what you say you're going to continue to do, then you'll be there for many years to come.
Mm-hmm.
And he's certainly knocking at the park at the minute. I think you and me are agreed that the sword and the kilt's a bit overkill. You probably would admit that himself, but he is working for an American company with an American audience, and they love all that Braveheart shite.
Yeah.
So
I think it's very caricature of who he is. You know, us Scotsmen aren't all ginger with big beards called Hamish, eat haggish, neeps and tatties with fucking swords, man.
And we all don't talk like this. We don't all speak like that, Seamus, let me tell you.
Yeah. By the way, Big E,
Intercontinental champion. Yeah.
I can see the climb beginning for Big E. By the way, here's a question I'm going to ask you. Do you think Big E is the breakout star of the new day?
Depends what industry you're speaking about.
Well, as he, the like, so
what I mean by that is with Xavier Woods, he could certainly break into another.
You didn't just go there.
Yeah.
Gaming, I think Xavier Woods has broken
out in the gaming industry. Oh, yes, of course, in gaming. Absolutely. To be honest with you, I'm going to say yes, because I know people will sit there and go, oh, but Kofi, and I'm like, nah, sorry. Kofi, great wrestler. I love Kofi, talented guy, but I don't know. Yeah, he's never been a top-level guy to me, Kofi. Even when we went for the whole Kofi-mania thing, I was like, I'm glad he was getting the moment there, but I knew it was only going to be temporary. He's not the type of guy they want. But Big E has got potential, I feel, as long as he's not the character that he was in the New Day all the time.
That's true. But I don't think...
He needs to evolve.
The thing about Big E, of what I've kind of noticed, is that he needs people to... He doesn't come out of his shell on his own. So if he's a single wrestler, you're not going to get the great promos. I think he's a collaborator and not someone that does it on his own. I think his in-ring work is going to be great. I think you get good matches out of him, but I don't think you're going to get the run at him that everybody's expecting. I just don't see it.
Well, to be honest, it's one of those question mark ones for me, because we'll have to wait and see what he's capable of. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see what... I think we've seen a heel Big E before, but that was before he really kind of found his feet with the New Day.
Yeah.
He's not a heel at the moment, but it's going to happen down the road, and that'll be the making or the breaking of them for me. But we'll wait and see with that. I mean, there was... I'll be honest, I didn't watch WWE live. I don't really watch the Raws or the Smackdowns, or especially I've not watched any NXT live at all. I'll certainly be making more of an effort to do so now that we're doing this. I watch AEW every week, but I made an effort to kind of catch up with the segments and stuff like that. So in SmackDown, I know that you've got the whole Roman Reigns stuff going on right now with Paul Heyman, and it seems there seem to be building a feud with Daniel Bryan there. I think that's got potential. Daniel Bryan's definitely not taking that title off Roman, so it's a bit of disbelief in there.
Mate, do you know what I love about Roman? Which, by the way, again, he's doing the best work he has ever done, right?
It's been his year. In my opinion,
Roman Reigns, I genuinely feel like nobody can beat him.
Yeah, he's building that legitimacy. Mm-hmm. Worries me a little bit is Goldberg's piping up, which we'll talk about Goldberg soon, I'm sure. But he's starting to pipe up saying, oh, Roman Reigns, you're next. And we're going, better know.
Mania, come take his title, and then Roman gets it back at Mania. Fuck off.
Thank you.
Do you know what would be even better? If Goldberg comes out and he's like, yeah, yeah, and everybody expects the whole Goldberg, and fucking Roman just leathers him. Oh, how good would that be?
I mean, see, at the minute, right, Roman should, they're booking Roman perfectly at the minute, but I agree with you, he needs to be unbeaten for a long time. He needs to hold that title past Mania. If they book, I know that the idea is they're going to book him long term with The Rock. To be honest, see Mania next year, if it's not in front of an audience. Mm-hmm. Rock's got nothing going on, man. Rock's not filming any movies right now. Mm-hmm. Get him in, but get him beat. I'm sorry. He needs to. If Rock beats Roman with the way he's being booked here, it's not the right decision. I don't really know anybody who at the minute who's like, that's a guy who needs to beat Roman. I don't know if if that person's even emerged yet.
Even Brock.
No, because it would be the same thing again. I mean, what would that do for Roman? I think Roman, if you built him correctly, he's in a spot where whoever beats him could be a made guy themselves.
I think Drew could beat him.
Well,
and do you know what? How good was that match? Best match I've seen in a long time. That is the prime example of a match, right? That a clean. Well, I wouldn't say a clean. Even if it was clean, though, right? That is the greatest example of a match where no one is hurt. Right.
Yes. Nobody came out looking bad.
No, it was fucking brilliant, and you're just like, the fact that Drew lost. You know that Drew could take him. Right.
I mean, I feel that match was good, but I feel that that should be a lot further down the road. I think they maybe should save that for a Mania. I think they should be kind of kept a part of the moment. They're both doing a good job of representing their brands. I think SmackDown, it's not a criticism of Drew. I think Roman's probably doing a little bit of a better job than Drew is on that at the minute. Yeah. But
Do you know why? Do you know why?
It's because I think,
right, because Drew's like, yes, I'm the greatest good guy. Yeah, I'm going to... if you it's fuck difficult. Up in this company, I'm going to be down your throat. See, when you turn Drew heel, he's going to take it up a notch yet again. I think Drew as a heel will be a better Drew than a face Drew. Face Drew is good, right? Yeah. But the intensity, everything will just, it'll go up. If you imagine Drew that cheats to win.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Drew is good. Drew's just good all around. I mean, maybe for a minute, like, where I was like, is it we just saying that because we're Scottish? Because we speak to a lot of Scottish people, and they've got a bad word to say about Drew. Of course we don't. Yeah. But I'm just trying to think, is there anybody down south going, Drew's absolutely overrated. He's absolutely jock muck. Nah, no, it's not happening. Everybody likes Drew. He's doing a good job. But yeah, Daniel Bryan will get a good match or two out of Roman Reigns. Other than that, there's no chance. It almost gauges my interest a little bit less because I'm like, Daniel Bryan, I like Daniel Bryan, but he's not being Roman, is he?
No, absolutely not.
The Miz is kind of being booked with, the Miz and AJ Styles are kind of going with Drew McIntyre at the minute. I could see AJ possibly beating Drew maybe at some time soon, but I'll be honest, if I actually said I cared. That's the problem. WWE's not got a lot going on for me at the moment.
I think WWE are a bit wary of AJ Styles. Because they know that he's got his eyes on him.
you think you've got a theory about AJ Styles? I mean, with the position WWE's in at the minute, they're doing their Legends show, and for me, that tells you everything you need to know. They're getting the lowest ratings. It's a combination of not booking people correctly, the crowd. See the Thunderdome? It's a good idea, but I actually prefer the setup AEW's got at the moment. It's limited capacity, but even with just a small amount of fans, it makes such a difference because it's legitimate. The Thunderdome, it's still an empty arena, man, with a bunch of people going like pretending to be shocked, and because they're not playing for the cameras, it's what people do. So that's why I don't have a lot of interest in WWE at the moment. The Fiend, it's happened there. The Fiend's dead, apparently, but Alexa Bliss is telling us that he's not really dead because he's going to come back even scarier now. And
would it be if he came out and he's like, guys, they didn't really burn me. It was a dummy. they burned a dummy. It wasn't me, you're funny.
Or he came back as a chip or something like that. Reinvents himself as the chip. I don't know. He's going to come back with something. He's going to come back with a leather face threat, or you know, he's really like a Michael Myers type character. It doesn't matter, Jason. Doesn't matter what you do, you can't beat the Fiend. He dies. He comes back. He comes back, and I still don't care. I'm sorry. I like the idea of the character. My problem with it is Bray Wyatt himself. If you're going to play that mysterious character, see your social media. I know you love it and all that, but get it to fuck. Mm-hmm. It's the reason why Undertaker was so good at what he does for so many years. It was the mystique. It was the mystery of... We knew who the Undertaker was. We knew there was a guy behind it, but we knew next to fuck all about him. Mm-hmm. We didn't have Undertaker posing with his kids in full fucking costume on Twitter.
Yeah.
Here, I'm the Fiend, and here's my wife, and here's my baby boy, or baby girl that's been born. For me, I don't know, maybe it's a really... modern age thing. They need to have social media, Todd. They're allowed to do that, blah, blah, blah. But for me, if I was a wrestler in that position, I would be a total recluse. I would be no social media, no nothing. I would want my character to be the most.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about The Fiend. And I hate this Harley Quinn Joker type thing. I think it's fucking cliched as fuck. And I like Alexa Bliss, but I've got no interest in it. Yeah. Sorry, ran over.
So that kind of concludes our This Week in Wrestling. Make sure you guys check us out next week to hear our thoughts. I mean, we're total long-time wrestling fans. I've watched wrestling from the Golden Age right through the Attitude Era to now. Same with Todd, kind of. He's been more of a historian. checking it out while kind of tuned in Ruthless Aggression Era.
To put it straight, I mean, me and Kevin have known each other for a long time, probably going back to like 2003, I would say 17 years, 2003, 2004, around that time. Mm-hmm. And I knew wrestling when I first came in, I knew of it. But I didn't, as you say, Ruthless Aggression Era, I mean, it's kind of where I came in. I knew a bit about the Rock, Austin years, Triple H, that type of stuff. But I never was fully into it like we would be now. Mm-hmm. It's after I met Kevin and Kevin started telling me all these, like, the reason we're going to do a segment of the show, I don't think we're going to do it this week, but going forward, I want Kevin to dive in to the more unknown and weird aspects of wrestling, because even when you think you know it all, you think you've seen it all, especially when you've looked at it as much as far as I have, you still miss things. Mm-hmm. And you miss things that only people who were there watching at the time remember. Absolutely. And Kevin is that guy. Kevin is a guy who grew up watching it. His mum had tapes, a cupboard full of these VHS tapes. And the year was like 2018 or something like that. We still had VHS tapes recorded. But he was there. He'd seen it all. And he used to tell me these stories that he'll tell you in the coming episodes. And it used to absolutely fascinate me. And I'd go, okay, I'm going to look into that. And that's what made me fall down the rabbit hole and get to where I am now. And I've seen it, like we mentioned, with J-Mac. I'm starting to see myself in J-Mac as he's going,
yeah.
Wait, are you trying to tell me that Marty Jannetty did what to Shawn Michaels?
Yeah.
It's like, he did. It's not so much what happens in the ring. It's all the interesting shit behind it. Yeah. If you're into wrestling, you know, because you've done it yourself. But Kevin's a guy who lived through it. He was there way before I was. And he's half the reason why I'm here today speaking about wrestling. He's a guy who got me into this rabbit hole.
And it's a very universal rabbit hole. We all kind of collectively are one big consciousness. Same with you guys listening.
We are the WWE and AEW universe.
Universe, right? Exactly. So I'll quickly just briefly touch on what happened this very day back in 1997.
97, 23 years ago. Wow.
Yes. On this day, Goldberg got smashed. his streak ended by Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, who tasered him with a cattle prod or something like that.
Aye, and he's still not bad about it at all. Like, he's so salty.
they mark that as being the moment that WCW, you know, the final nail in the WCW coffin. Yeah, so I thought I'd just kind of pop up on that. But, you know, I think on our next couple of episodes, we'll kind of dive into a little bit more about what happened on the day that we record, maybe 10, 15 years ago, and kind of just bring up a little bit of bits and bobs. But before we run out of time, we're going to go through our top five. Our top five wrestling moments for me, when Todd had kind of said, let's do our top five. And I suppose it's good for you guys to kind of hear that, to kind of judge who we are as wrestling fans, okay? I'll kick off mine with my number. So we'll go five being the lowest and not one being the highest.
Do you,
right?
Do you want to do it like you do five, then I do my five, and then you do four? And
I think maybe if I just go, here's my number five, and then your number five.
Yeah, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Sure. So my number five would have to be Hogan versus Warrior, that match back in 1990, which was WrestleMania 6. And the reason that was that for me is because that's the very first match I ever watched ever that started this whole craze on wrestling. So that happened in 1990. So I wasn't even born, right? So I must have had that around 96 or something, because I went into an old place called Fleming's. You could find in Inverkeith in Scotland. I think it still exists, and it's a place where you'd buy like furniture and whatnot. And I walked in, and I recognized Hulk Hogan like everybody else has said, because Vince McMahon is a genius when it comes to marketing. I recognized Hulk Hogan from a TV show that I watched regularly called Thunder in Paradise, right? That's Hulk Hogan, right? That's the guy that lifts cars. So I was like, Mum, please. And who was this other crazy motherfucker on the front? So I took that VHS home and I watched it like mad. And I could only watch it in the living room, so there was only one VHS at the time. This must have been about 96, right? And I watched it over and over again. And I remember just constantly being annoyed that Hogan didn't win, right? But then I was like, it's all right, though. It's all right, because they made up after it. Because look, they're hugging, right? But every time I would rewatch the VHS, I'd be like, come on, Hogan. Stupid. It's like, I'd still try and root for him, even though I knew, right? And it kind of left a bitter taste, like, oh, why did Warrior win? Right?
Looking up the law of averages. He's got to win one of these days.
But he totally didn't. He always got beat. And I always seen that, you know, Warrior had the Intercontinental title, right? But now he's got two titles. And I thought, God, I just thought, as cool as Warrior is, I didn't want Warrior to win. I wanted Hulk Hogan to win, because he was my guy. And from that moment, that's when wrestling became a thing for me. So that was awesome. It. And I was marking it. I was a mark. It's a wee like 3, 4, 5-year-old mark.
I'm a mark.
They got me hook, line, and sinker, man. I was like, fucking, I need to watch the next one now.
Awesome. I feel like I'm going to be your moments are going to be like the highs of the highs. When I put my list together, I'll be honest, I totally cocked up. I thought we were doing the top five moments of 2020. I can run through them very quickly at the end, but for the top five moments of all time, I thought, oh, it's really difficult. But I don't want to just click off the highlights, because I think I could say things like, you know, the Hell in a Cell, which you might talk upon. I don't know. I don't know Kevin's list. We don't know it either, which so far. But I thought, but okay, go for the moments that I enjoyed, my moments that maybe other people wouldn't know so much about. And for number five, I was between two. I almost went for the Dudley Boys' return when they returned in 2012, 2013 against the New Day, because it was the night after Mania, and it was incredible, and it still is a fantastic return, like one of the best returns in recent memory. But for me, I had to stick true, and it's never return, and it was return of Shane O'Mac when he returned. And I think it was because at that time, about that period, I'd got into wrestling quite a bit, and I'd done my homework. And I said to Kevin, I was like, you know who's not been around for a long fucking time who would fucking blow up a place if he came back? It was two people, really. But one of them was Kurt Angle. The other one was Shane McMahon. And people probably think, Shane McMahon, he wasn't a top guy or anything like that. But I tell you what, he was respected by the people who watched during that era. And he was around and played a pivotal part in the most golden era of wrestling. And people don't forget that shit. And it proved when he came back out of nowhere, the crowd went fucking mental. It was like, it's like a 5 minute standing ovation, and he got a "This is awesome" chant just for showing up. And you can see Vince, he's very proud and almost teary, and Shane McMahon is a bit teary, kind of breaks character a little bit. It's one of the best returns and most underrated returns, in my opinion. And he's been back ever since. And I know some people have kind of got go away heat with Shane McMahon. I personally don't. I love the guy. Whenever I see him, for me, I'm like, he's a guy who would make me tune into WWE no matter what he's doing. So that was number five on my top moments, because Shane McMahon's awesome.
Hell yeah, I have to agree with that. Number four for me would have to be not just the debut of Kane, but the actual Hell in a Cell match with Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker. Mate, again, VHS. I used to rewatch that. And you know what? I was happy Shawn Michaels won. At that age, I was rooting for Shawn Michaels to win. Right? Do you know why? Because he spent most of that match getting fucking leathered.
Oh, man.
To the point where the fact that, see that, just that, two guys trying to win. Who'd have thought that that'd be lost in wrestling, right? Two guys just trying to win. Taker knew he had the upper hand, right? It was his, you know, the Hell in a Cell was Shawn's going nowhere, right? This little bitch is going to get his comeuppance. And he beat the shit out of Shawn Michaels to the point where it took his brother, it's gonna be Kane! it took a monster ripping the door off, right? Using his own move against him, right? And the best of it was simply just the arm over to win the match.
Yeah.
It's just fucking poetry.
It's like he wasn't even aware of it.
No.
You know what the beauty of that match is, right? Hell in a Cell, for most people say that's Undertaker's match. Mm-hmm. That is Undertaker's match. But he lost the first ever Hell in a Cell. But the reason why that's his match is because Shawn Michaels took such a fucking beating in that match that there was no other way. That if you watched it, goes, I got beat, but I wouldn't believe anybody else beating him in that match.
Exactly.
Unless shit went like that went down.
Exactly.
So that is one of the best matches of all time. If anybody doesn't know already, I'm like the biggest Shawn Michaels mark in the world, and that leads me to my number four. Yet again, another probably underrated moment, but for me, it's my favourite promo of all time, especially heel promo. It was Shawn Michaels' 2005 promo in Montreal during his feud with Hulk Hogan. Of course, this was the second run that Shawn had after he came back from his back injury after 1997 Montreal, and I believe this was his first appearance back in Montreal since then. I'm getting goosebumps just thinking of it. He comes out dressed in a suit with a pink tie, by the way. A pink tie is a cue to Bret Hart, and then comes out with the line, "Who's your daddy, Montreal?" Then proceeds to sing the Canadian anthem. Oh, Canada, I hate this place so much. It sounds really juvenile, but you can see him smiling with the heat that he's getting. He begins to strip in the ring. He even gets Bret Hart the biggest pop that Bret Hart ever got, despite him not even being there. I love Bret Hart. I think he's a fantastic wrestler. But it's, I can't do it justice. If you have not seen it before, do yourself a favour. Go and watch Shawn Michaels' 2005 promo Montreal and watch an absolute lesson in heel promo and just absolute pure heat and hatred from an audience. And if anybody tells me Shawn Michaels was never great in the mic, I point to that promo and go, fuck you, Shawn Michaels was one of the best on the mic, man. Go and check it out. No bias, I won't see much more on that. I can't do it justice.
Another for me, so my third one again, featuring Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, was their match at Mania 25.
Oh, man.
Probably the best match ever. It's up there when you talk about top five greatest matches ever, was there. Not only for the match, for the story, for the conclusion of the story, for, you know, it all kind of come in full circle. That was almost the end of everything that kind of happened in the Attitude Era. But you and I actually spent our time, those couple of years, cooped up watching these matches, rooting for our own guy. And for me, that was just as special as the actual matches. The memories of, like, not having a house to run and kids to look after and just being teenagers and loving wrestling. For me, that, again, that stands out for one of those reasons.
We streamed out on my old laptop and we kept cutting out the stream. We come back and who was on top and who was winning.
Not only that, but you were so convinced Michaels was going to win. This is back when people actually believed the streak could be broken. And this would be like, what, 3 a.m. or whatever, because we're in the UK. So the pay-per-views are obviously later here in the UK. And your mum used to bang through just like that old Family Guy skit.
Keep it down.
If I gotta come through and tell you two again. And that's us.
Sure.
That's us marking out at false finishes.
That was great. That's still my favourite match to this day. I think it's a match that you can show to anybody and say, I think it's like the entry level match. I think if you say to somebody who's never watched wrestling, say, if you can't get into this match or like it, then you never will.
Yeah,
that's my opinion. So I feel that's one that J-Mac should watch. That's definitely one. There's lots. I mean, it's not just like that's the only one. There's thousands, thankfully, but that is definitely up there. Mm-hmm. For my number three, I've chosen another match. Maybe not as good a match, but certainly just as much a spectacle. Maybe even more of a spectacle. Rock Hogan. This match didn't even go in last. It's not a great wrestling match, but what I love about it is everybody knows they've seen it. The crowd almost like make up 50% of this match, mm-hmm. and Rock and Hogan just totally playing it. What I really love about it is that it's like almost like a time capsule in time, because The Rock now is like one of the most popular wrestlers of the time, but at the time he was still the wrestler and Hogan was the nostalgia wrestler. He was the one that they all wanted to go over, and it's quite clear with the hardcore fans they are all Hogan. The Rock's almost playing like a John Cena type role in this.
Yeah.
And to see Hogan, the only thing that would have made it better is if Hogan was in the red and yellow instead of the NWO stuff, but I think that's maybe the point. It was like a maybe not a double turn, but certainly a face turn for Hogan that night.
Yeah, they certainly, the audience dictated what they wanted, and
yes,
and Hogan and The Rock, like any proper wrestler, they reacted and responded to what the audience. So that, how can you not say that that's a perfect match? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's another one of those. If you listen to this podcast, and never seen it, I don't know what you're doing. But if not, go and watch it now. It's on the network. It's on. It should be online as well if you can find it. Mm. Honestly, it's 25 minutes, and it's 25 of the best minutes you'll see of a live sports type arena, but certainly wrestling matches, some spectacle.
Yeah, so. For sure. My number two, and bear in mind, I'm judging these right, just purely based on how it affected me to the wrestling product. If you can make me feel something, you're doing good, right? Especially through wrestling. When Matt Hardy come running through the audience and started proper laying into Edge,
oh,
after, man, we all knew what had gone down in real life, right? I was like, fucking what? Because this really blurred the lines between reality and fiction, right? Yeah.
Still does.
We all know what kind of went down between them. Edge had cheated. Edge and Lita had an affair behind Matt's back, and then Matt got fired because he spoke out about it. Obviously, he was upset. So everybody had this feeling already that Matt had been screwed. And then what really got me, and I think this is if it was all, and again that the fact that we're sitting here saying if it was all kind of faked, right? What really got me is you can tell when the security are pulling someone off in a work, right? A pull apart as a work, and you can tell when they're not. And the one thing that got me was the intensity. Matt Hardy jumped the railing and started attacking Edge, right? And the security were on him like that, right? To the point where they were holding his hair and everything. And he just was, And I know a lot of it was a work, right? But there was, they done it so well. They done it so well that you were sitting there going, fucking let him go, right? That for me was like, wow. And then I'd be so looking forward to an Edge match because I knew, like, he's going to come out there, right? And he would, he'd just fucking jump out of nowhere. And everybody, the crowd, you'd hear the crowd before you'd see Matt because people in the crowd would see Matt ready to jump the barrier, right? So you would hear, you'd see Edge, you'd hear the crowd, right? And then you would see Matt. And I'm like, fucking, that was fucking electrifying to watch. And I thought, fucking yes.
Some people might not like me for this comment, but it's the most over Matt Hardy ever was and ever will be.
You know what? I think it was. I don't know. The broken Matt Hardy done.
It was over, but I think that was his most over period at that
if
point.
If only they'd run with it properly rather than having him get his heat kicked in.
It also legitimised Edge as a star, to be honest, because, I mean, yeah. Edge has always been good, but I think that after that, he just went up another level and then he got into the Undertaker stuff and the rest is history.
Yeah, I think it go down as the start of Edge's rise.
Yeah.
He kind of did take off after that.
My number two is definitely one that was not one I watched live at the time. It's one of these ones that when I was digging back in, I feel is a massive hidden gem. And maybe people will say, that's not a hidden gem, but for me it is. You might have watched it live at the time. You'll certainly know what was going on at the time because it was the time you were watching. It was Backlash 2000. And to set the premise regarding it, Austin had just broken his neck and had been out for 5 months. And this was at the point where the authority reigned, the WWE, which was Triple H and Stephanie McMahon.
McMahon-Helmsley era.
Yes, the McMahon-Helmsley era. They had the title. Everybody couldn't fucking stand them. They were doing a grand job at being the top heels. And this was the point where Vince and Shane were also in. And their victim of choice at that time was the second most over person other than Austin at the time, which was The Rock. And in Backlash 2000, the main event of Backlash 2000, The Rock challenged Triple H for the WWF title with Shane McMahon as the referee. And Vince McMahon aside, there was no chance he could win it. And also, Steve Austin was also supposed to be a gauntlet enforcer. But before the match, Vince comes out and says, he's not in the building tonight. He's no coming. Get it up, yous. And they then proceeded to battle Seven Colours of Shite at The Rock. For about 20 minutes, The Rock looked like he was about to make a comeback, but then he would get fucked over by the referee, Shane McMahon not counting for him, that type of stuff. And you know where it's going, but still, when it happens, nothing quite prepares you for the obscene reaction when that glass shatters, mm-hmm. and then Steve Austin comes out in his friggin' camouflage gear and
just stomp a mud hole and walk it dry.
Yeah, cheers to Patterson, cheers to Briscoe, cheers to McMahon, stunners all round. Rock then does his finish, wins the title, the place is going bananas. If you've never seen the main event at Backlash 2000, I implore you, stop this video, go to it, come back and say thank you, Todd, that was fucking awesome, because it is. Yeah. That's my number two, and it is so overlooked.
Yeah,
for sure. I don't know how you feel, Kevin, if that brings back any memories.
Of course, mate, of course. I was there for Austin's, you know, his full rise to then watch him kind of fizzle away in 2002, 2003. So it was a magical time. The Austin era, I mean, that was the Attitude era was Austin and McMahon.
Yeah.
You know what
really
I mean?
It was.
And
it really was.
You know, I think Austin's hit that stratosphere now, like The Rock, like Hogan, where no matter what, the minute you hear the glass shatter, always be the same reaction.
And it'll be the same this Monday night. Well, it probably won't be because the crowd will be
likely.
It'll just be the glass shattering followed by.
Oh, that sucks, man. So here we go. Number one for me. So I'm going to paint the picture. Terminal. So what happened was, so Undertaker had a match with Vince McMahon, a buried alive match, right?
Oh, I know this is cool.
Kane came out and ended the match. He put Taker to rest. And a whole year went by without seeing Taker one time, right? And then the dirt sheets start to report. We think Taker's coming back. We think he's going to be, you know, Taker of old before the American Badass. And I was like, nah, no way, but that would be fucking cool, man. That would be fucking cool. So it was to a point where I was like, he's not coming back, right? The tease, the absolute tease towards WrestleMania where Taker's coming for Kane. In the middle of the Royal Rumble, the lights go out, you hear the dun, the fucking ring starts shaking, right? There's smoke everywhere, lightning, and he's like, no. The fact they managed to tease this match with no Taker, right? But just lightning effects, right? And Kane's reaction. And then the moment where Kane's standing in the ring at WrestleMania 20 and the lights go out and then all you hear is, I was like, fucking here we go, mate. Here we go. Right? The druids are all out. They're holding up the fucking the sticks with flames on it. I was like, right. That moment for me was like fucking, I was just, it was, that's why I watched wrestling. Right? Just to hear Paul Bearer, because Paul Bearer hadn't been seen on TV for a long time. I mean, you had Taker, but Paul Bearer was long gone. So to just hear Paul Bearer, you were like, holy shit. It was like Luke Skywalker coming back in The Mandalorian.
Yeah, right. It's absolutely the wrestling equivalent of that. Yeah. It's also from a time where the internet isn't what it is now, and it wasn't spoiled. It was just teased enough to go, we think this is happening, we hope this is happening, but you never had it ruined going, that's going to happen, by the way.
Yeah,
it was just hope, pure hope. And then as you say with that, I wish I could have experienced it at the time because I can completely understand how an Undertaker mark like yourself must have felt at that point. And let's be honest, in my opinion, from that point onwards, he goes on the best. People might argue me here, but I feel that he does his best work from there onwards.
A lot of his, I mean, I think you can take his best from previous and his best from that moment, and you've got yourself the best.
It's certainly not a criticism of that the American Badass era, because actually he did a lot of really good stuff during then. As I say, I didn't watch a lot of it at the time, but going back, people seem to, you know, it's not an era it's focused on as much, at least anymore, at least from WWE standpoint, but it's certainly an era where he did a lot of good work and he should be celebrated for that as well. Yeah. But he certainly has had his dicks up quite a lot recently by WWE, so anyway, deservedly so. And it leads me to my number one, which also includes The Undertaker. Now, I was in two minds because my first instinct was to put the end of the era, Hell of Cell, WrestleMania 28, because of the whole Triple H, Shawn Michaels, three of my favourite wrestlers at the time, just kind of coming together. But then I thought about that and I was like, nah, it doesn't really tie in with The Undertaker character. I don't like him being kind of like, I'll be your pal, I'll be your buddy. I liked him kind of being like, I'm digging holes, taking souls, fuck you type thing. Mm-hmm. So it's a good moment, but for me, even though it's one that make a lot of lists, it goes down as number one because it's the most shocking, the one we never thought would ever happen. I can still remember what our reactions were like at the time. It's WrestleMania 30, it's not a good match, but my word, when it comes to moments, nothing from here to the day I will die, in regards to wrestling, will make me react the way that WrestleMania 30 when Brock Lesnar beat Undertaker for the streak. Mm-hmm. Nothing will recreate that feeling. We were, oh, look, another F5. All right, okay. Me and you were actually quite bored by that point. Like, aye, Taker, just fucking pin him and get it done with. And then when it happened, it was, yeah. And the reaction of the crowd, you see, I don't know, you cannot manufacture that. No, they will never be able to capture that light in a bottle again. And when people say, oh, it shouldn't have been broken, I'm like, no, because that reaction they got there, they will never get again from anything else.
The audience just kind of stood still there. They're like,
yeah, for me, it's like the ultimate, like, I think it helps because to me, I was invested in a streak by this point. We went through, the streak was never really a thing, but see, when it began to become a thing, it became like the most important thing on Mania to me, or the most intriguing at least, because I'm like, see, this year, were they actually there? Were they actually there? Mm-hmm. See, after Michaels didn't do it, Triple H came in and I thought, right, if they're going to do it now, this will be the time to do it. And after 28, I was like, right, okay, they're never going to do this then. So I was like, that's it. They're never going to be Undertaker at WrestleMania. It's done with CM Punk. When CM Punk faced him, I was like, doesn't matter. You're not beating him. This is the whole thing. Nobody's going to be Undertaker. They'll all come close. It's like, you'll chase a dragon. It's like, you just get a bit closer every time, but you never actually catch him. But then Brock Lesnar fucking caught him and fucking pinned him. And we all kind of lost our minds. Yeah. I remember the rest of that show. It was a great WrestleMania that year.
But... They even managed to pick us up after that, Daniel Bryan.
But it was such a lull. I think there was like two or three matches in between that event and the main event. I can't even remember what they were.
Divas match followed the Undertaker. And actually, this was before the woman actually really took it serious.
I remember that because you remember saying, you've been reading something on Twitter like, they've sent the Divas out for sacrifice. Or something like that. But yeah, see the other matches in that pay-per-view, I can't remember, I think it was like Batista and John Cena or something like that. But honestly, we were like shocked. We were like, somebody died. It was a bit, I imagine, probably the closest thing, and it's going to sound quite morbid, is probably when Owen Hart over the edge, that feeling of just like, what have we just seen?
Kind of. Remember, maybe the fans, not comparable. He was dead,
huh? I know. I don't want to compare something that was scripted in a work to something that actually happened for real and a man actually passed away, but I'm just trying to compare, you know, how we felt, like, how like, what the actual fuck?
Yeah.
And I cannot write or predict any scenario in wrestling where they'll be able to do anything like that again. And the streak was its own thing as well. I mean, the fact that he got beat and the streak still carried some legitimacy afterwards speaks how the legitimacy of the Undertaker. So
exactly.
Anyway, that was my top five. Just very, very briefly, I did do a top five for 2020. I'll just very briefly bang that off. Number five, Dinner de Benoit, which I alluded to earlier. Fucking loved it. Musicals in wrestling, it was like something that had to happen at some point, and I was glad I was alive to see it. Four, McIntyre's run as champ. Roman heel turn number three. Taker Boneyard match and the Last Ride documentary series is all rock and roll. And the number one for me was the Royal Rumble match, which I felt was the best Royal Rumble match they've done in absolute donkeys, with the return of Edge. McIntyre eliminating Lesnar, and just Brock Lesnar, man. Brock Lesnar deserves so much credit for that Rumble match. He was, it was like a Rumble match of old, you know. So that was my top five for 2020. So
absolutely, I don't have a top five for 2020, so I will put mine on next. Okay,
cool.
But yeah, that's been an absolute blast doing this. So if you guys have enjoyed, please hit the subscribe button, follow us on YouTube, and wherever else you hear this. You can find Jibber Jabber Podcast everywhere. Make sure to check out the next Jibber Jabber Podcast again, which is the deep dive of
Sleepless in Seattle.
Sleepless in Seattle. God,
hated it that much you couldn't even remember the name.
Exactly. No. But definitely go and check that out and check out everything Jibber Jabber Podcast. You can find us at jibberjabberpodcast.com. You can find everything there. You can support us in every which way there. I have been Kevin Wells, as always, and Todd, you have been Todd.
I have been me.
So I look forward to bringing you more wrestling content every single week. Todd, where can everyone follow you?
They can't. Well, you can if you want, but you won't read much.
So yeah, definitely check us out on Facebook, Twitter, whatever, and wherever else.
Just follow Jabber Jabber. That's fine.
Thanks again.
See you guys.
Class.